I spent $30 on a new audio cable, only for it to sound exactly like what you're hearing now. Sounds exactly the same, right? The thing is, it didn't make any different sound. This is the third cable I purchased. The other one didn't, it wasn't too bad, right? The only problem is it's a very rare 1 foot cable. And I bought it for the novelty, thinking, well, I'm not going to need more than the foot, right? You do. You will. When you're recording on the podcast, you do want to walk, move around, think of stuff, you know? Speaking of other things I purchased recently, we've done some upgrades on the podcast. I have a new mic. No, I don't. Not a new mic. I wish. I do remember that I had an old mic in my room somewhere. I don't know where the fuck it is, but I got to find it. I do have this mouse, this new mouse. It's helping me with editing videos, and to be honest, it really has sped up things. Quite a bit, actually. I also bought a really big canvas, a professional grade one. It costs more than the cable, but how big is this thing? I have the schematics right here. 16 by 20 inches, or 40.6 centimeters by 50.8 centimeters. Gallery wrapped heavy duty canvas, and it is very thick. It's like an inch thick. I don't know how thick that is in metric? Yeah, in metric. Anyway. So are we still mad about that whole In Defense of Shadows thing? Like that guy, that YouTuber that was like assuming that... What's his name? Wendy Goon was like a white supremacist for no other reason other than he lived in the South and had friends who were white. Like, the whole... I don't know, man. I still think about that, and I think there are really people out there that think they have the worst takes imaginable, and they just assume that people are going to agree with them. That's so embarrassing, man. How do you live with yourself realizing that you're this fucking embarrassing to be around? Like, it's not even a little thing, right? It was like a... Everyone on the internet was in an uproar, like, for just a few hours, granted, but I still think about that. I still think, if you guys watched the video, you would understand why it's still bugging me. It's just because of the fact that this person was, I would say they look drunk, you know? It's one of those things where it's like, you know, this guy's racist, let me tell you what, you know, like, mumbling his words and stuff. Like, to me, it felt like this person wouldn't say these things if they weren't under the influence of some sort of illicit substance. And I'm just saying that as someone who knows people like that, okay? I'm from California. I'm from the Valley. I know shit when I see it. And I know this person was definitely off his rocker in some way, shape, or form. No one ever mentioned that, right? They just assumed this guy was an idiot. Granted, right? There's a lot of people who are really stupid and have bad takes and are going to say stuff like that. But I still think about it, you know? I hope, okay? This is me just... trying not to be an asshole, because there's enough of those in the world. I hope this person gets the help they need. You know? Granted, I could have said that nicer. So I'm starting up my weight loss journey again, right? And I don't think the scale that I bought is accurate. Let me tell you why. Because I highly doubt you can lose 7 pounds in 3 days. Like, 7 pounds in 3 days is a lot, right? Like, that's a trip to the bathroom to me. But I'm thinking about the scale that I bought, because I hope it's not inaccurate. It was really expensive. Luckily, I did get it on discount. Normally, it's like $75, and I got it for $20. Having said that, I think it's... I don't know. Something wrong with it. It is definitely for smaller body types, because I get on it, and my feet on both sides almost just come right off, because it's just... also, it's in kilograms, and there's no way to change it to, like, you know, pounds. I think I mentioned this earlier, right? I don't know, man. I just woke up. But anyway, I kept... I'm still going with that. I've learned how many laps I need to run a mile. But laps around, like, certain things. Like the truck. If I'm at work and I'm driving the truck and I stop somewhere, I can run around it 35 times for it to count as a mile. Now, I wouldn't do it in public often, because running around the track is one thing, right? But running around the truck 35 times, people are going to notice. So, I don't know. I feel like I can be more discreet about it. Having said that, it's just kind of funny seeing someone running around it, you know? Running around the truck. I was watching Sam Onella Academy the other day, and I realized that there is, what is it? Jesus Christ, I hate when Wikipedia does that. Anyway, there's a video that Salmonella did where he's talking about Fidel Castro. And if you guys don't know who that is, it's the leader of Cuba, at least it was, up until 2016, when he died. The thing is, right, he's not known to be a good guy by any means, you know. He's a dictator, period. However, there's a lot of stuff I've never heard about him. Most of the video of Salmonella Academy, he did just call him Fidel Castro. I've never heard his full name. Fidel Alejandro Castro Ruz. That is Fidel Castro's full name. I've never heard it before, you know. It feels weird hearing it. And I thought, why don't we just look up more stuff about Fidel Castro we don't actually know? And for me saying we don't actually know, I mean like a lot of people. Like, this isn't general knowledge, you know. At least to me, it's not. I'm going to use me as a baseline. But I do know that a lot of people are really well-versed in, like, dictators and stuff. It's just, the thing is, well, a lot of this knowledge isn't really common, you know? For example, what actually made him famous, you know, what actually made him a dictator, was actually, he was a revolutionary. One of the main ones was the movement and the Moncada Barracks attack in 1952 to 1953. Castro formed a group called the Movement. We're reading off Wikipedia, by the way. Castro formed a group called the Movement, which operated along a clandestine cell system, publishing underground newspaper El Acusador, the Accuser, while arming and training anti-Batista recruits. From July 1952, they went on a recruitment drive, gaining around 1,200 members in a year, the majority of Havana's poorer districts. Although a revolutionary socialist, Castro avoided an alliance with the Communist Popular Socialist Party, or the PSP. I'm sorry. Oh, I haven't heard PSP in a while. Not this specific people, you know, the Popular Socialist Party. It's just, I think of the Sony PSP, which is what I used to play Monster Hunter on. Anyway, fearing it would frighten away political moderates, but kept in contact with PSP members like his brother Raul. Castro stockpiled weapons for a planned attack on the Moncada Barracks, a military garrison outside of Santiago de Cuba Oriente. Santiago de Cuba Oriente, okay. Castro's militants intended to dress in army uniforms and arrive at the base on the 25th of July, seizing control and raiding the armory before reinforcements arrived. Oh, my stomach. Supplied with new weaponry, Castro intended to spark a revolution along Oriente's impoverished cane cutters and promote further uprisings. Castro's plan emulated those of the 19th century Cuban independence fighters who had raided Spanish barracks. Castro saw himself as the heir to independent leader José Martí. That's kind of cool. I didn't know about any of this. Truth be told, I don't know any American who actually knows a lot of history of Cuba, and I'm saying that as somebody who knows a lot of history, right? I know a lot of history of, let's say, Mexico, Canada, you know, a lot of, I don't know, it's really simple history that we all know about over here. Granted, it's not common knowledge to everyone. For example, if you go to, like, Florida, a lot of people in Florida are definitely going to know about Cuban history because a lot of people are Cuban. It's the same as, like, when people from a certain country know more about their history than other people from different countries, you know what I mean? As an American, I'm trying to branch out and learn more about other people's history, because America's history is so well known to us anyway, because it's constantly repeated back to us, right? But what I want to learn is other people's history, you know, other countries' history. Let's move on. Castro gathered 165 revolutionaries for the mission, ordering his troops not to cause bloodshed unless they met armed resistance. The attack took place on the 26th of July, 1953, ran into trouble. Three of the 16 cars that had set out from Santiago failed to get there. Reaching the barracks, the alarm was raised, with most of the rebels pinned down by machine gun fire. Four were killed before Castro ordered a retreat. The rebels suffered 6 fatalities and 15 other casualties, while the army suffered 19 dead and 27 wounded. Meanwhile, some rebels took over a civilian hospital, subsequently rounded up, tortured, and 22 were executed without trial. Damn. Accompanied by 19 comrades, Castro set out for Gran Piedra in the rugged Sierra Maestra Mountains, several kilometers to the north, where they could establish a guerrilla base. Responding to the attack, Batista's government proclaimed martial law, ordering a violent crackdown on dissent and imposing strict media censorship. The government broadcast misinformation about the event, claiming that the rebels were communists who had killed hospital patients, although news and photographs of the army's use of torture and summary executions in Oriente soon spread, causing widespread public and some governmental disapproval. Huh. Cuba's history is pretty dark, you know? Like, I always assumed it was, but, like, this is a lot of bloodshed. The thing about it, right, is I never knew anything about the history of Cuba, but we're specifying Castro right now, you know, because he was one of the main dictators. Like, when people hear Castro, people hear Fidel Castro, they think of Cuba, you know, simple as. And a lot of the hijinks that he did. I say hijinks in a respectful manner. I don't know what other words to use. So we know a little bit about Castro, at least a key event in his life, right? A little bit of details. Just to bring you up on who we're talking about, right? A revolutionary guy from communist Cuba. But it was communist after him, you know what I mean? Anyway, let's talk about his personal life. Because the thing about people like this is that you never hear about his personal life. You just hear about their ideas and stuff. Now, let's talk about the personality of Castro. We have here on Wikipedia, okay? Juan Reynaldo Sanchez, Castro's former bodyguard, detailed much of his personal and private life in his book, The Double Life of Fidel Castro. He described Castro as nothing ordinary about him at all. He's unique, special, and different. He profiled him as an egocentric who loved being the center of attention and, with his almost electric charisma, grabbed the attention of the people around him. He was also highly manipulative. With his formidable intelligence, he could easily manipulate a person or group of people. In addition, he was repetitive and obsessive. In discussions with his colleagues or foreigners, he would repeat the same things repeatedly until they were convinced he was right. It was impossible to contradict him on any subject whatsoever. Anyone who attempted to convince him that he was wrong, or even made a suggestion that it could be improved slightly, was making a fatal error. Fidel would then make a mental mark of the individual as an idiot and wait for the right time to retaliate against him. Nobody, not even Raul, was exempt from this. Despite being the Minister of the Armed Forces, he would bring seemingly minor military discussions to Castro for his final approval to avoid inadvertently contradicting him. Sanchez believed that General Arnaldo Ochoa's downfall was significantly related to his willingness to contradict Fidel's orders in Angola. So, don't contradict the man. You know, Samanella's video was way funnier. He talks about, like, how Castro can eat, like, 18 scoops of ice cream after a full meal, which is basically 2 pints of ice cream. Stuff like that's what I wanted to read, man. This guy's fucking depressing. I do like this technique that I just read about. Castro was known for working long hours. He primarily woke up late, rarely before 10 or 11 in the morning, and started his work day. He started his working day around noon and would work until late at night, often only going to bed at 3 or 4 a.m. He preferred to meet foreign diplomats in these early hours, believing that they'd be tired and he could gain the upper hand in negotiations. That's actually clever. Castro liked to meet with ordinary citizens, both in Cuba and abroad, but took a particular paternal attitude towards Cubans, treating them as if they were part of his own giant family. British historian Alex von Tunzelman commented that, though ruthless, Castro was a patriot, a man with a profound sense that it was his mission to save the Cuban people. Political scientist Paul C. Castro's quintessential totalitarian, his charismatic appeal. Jesus Christ, it's a lot of words. God damn it, I don't care about his political side. I want to know about the man himself. It's actually hard to find stuff like that, right? Finding out about a Cuban dictator is not easy because I'm not trying to find out about his political side. I'm trying to find out about him, okay? About the guy himself. All we could determine is that the guy was always on edge, you know? But what I'm trying to find is, like, what did Castro do on his day off, you know?
That's hard to find.
So apparently I was looking at a different page of Wikipedia, and I realized that maybe I shouldn't have started with Castro just his name. So I looked up funny stuff, right? Things that Castro did aside from, you know, dictatorship stuff, which wasn't a lot, okay? He did like to dive for seashells, which, fuck, that's really it. Smoke cigars, that's it. Okay, I think Salmonella really took the cake with this one, right? Like he said, he was obsessed with dairy. Like, so I looked up Castro and dairy, and holy shit, there's a lot more about it that we didn't read up, like, that we didn't see. And I get it, you know? Honestly, it's really funny that in the episode, Salmonella had to, he had to fucking bolster the story up, because it's not as funny in reading on the Wikipedia page. We have here a story of the CIA finding out, hey, so Castro really likes dairy, huh? Okay, 1961. I'm reading the Wikipedia page, okay? This time we're reading, what was it? Castro and Dairy. In 1961, the Central Intelligence Agency tried to use Castro's love of ice cream against him. Every day at the time, Castro ordered a chocolate milkshake from the Havana Libre Hotel lunch counter. Richard Bissell Jr., the CIA Deputy Director for Plans, offered Sam Giancana and Santo Traficante Jr., the heads of the Chicago and Tampa crime families, $150,000 in order to assassinate Castro. They would give them a pill of botulinum toxin to a waiter with the goal of putting it in Castro's chocolate milkshake. But the pill froze to the side of the hotel's freezer and broke. This was one of over 600 failed assassination attempts on Castro by the CIA. In 1966, Fidel Castro had a large ice cream parlor built in Havana called Copelia, which I thought was cool. Copelia is the wall... It's the Disneyland of ice cream, located in Cuba. Copelia is admittedly one of the better sagas discussing Castro, right? Let me tell you right now, Copelia, let's read the Wikipedia page. Why not? Because Copelia is also an ice cream parlor. Copelia is the name of an ice cream parlor chain in Cuba, named after the ballet Copelia. Originally built in a project led by Fidel Castro, Copelia is a state-run and sells in Cuban pesos. Cuban pesos. What's wrong with my throat lately, man? You guys have been hearing it, right? Do I sound different to you guys? This place serves 35,000 customers each day, and 4,200 U.S. gallons of ice cream daily. Holy shit, that's a lot. When business started in 1966, it ran with a count of 26 flavors and 25 combinations. Today, lines are generally long and the supply and selection of flavors is scarce, with usually only one or two available at any given time. Nice. Copelia was originally built in a project led by Fidel Castro. Okay, obviously we know that. Let's see, just keep reading on. The site of the first Copelia was originally taken by the Reina Mercedes Hospital, which functioned from 1886 to 1954, when it was demolished. They demolished a hospital to build ice cream. Holy shit, this guy really loves ice cream. Originally, there were plans to build another hospital on the site, but plans later changed, and a 50-story skyscraper was to be built on the site. But all these plans fell through. A tourism promotion pavilion, Parque Ainit, what the fuck, occupied the site. Then the Centro Recreativo Nocturnal, Nighttime Entertainment Center, before Copelia finally took over. Mario Girona was the architect of the new ice cream palace built in the site of 1966. The building was influenced by the biomorphic modernism of Italian, Mexican, and Southern American modernists like Pierre Luigi Nervi, Felix Candela, and Oscar Niemeyer, who saw the opportunity to leave behind the rectangular forms of the street high-rises and utilize the plasticity of reinforced concrete. Populist ideology helped shape the design and use of the public space. Very nice, very beautiful. So they decided, hey, let's just fucking make the most beautiful artistic piece right in the middle of the slums. Let's just demolish a hospital. It's not like anyone's using it. People don't get sick, right? Fuck it. You know what they need? Ice cream. Ice cream in this communist aristocracy? What the fuck was I saying? Look, Cuba's weird in terms of, like, their political stuff. I'm not going to say anything else about it. People know a lot about Cuba. Some people love it. Some people hate it. I'm just here for the ice cream. Everyone else, I'm a huge dairy fan. Anyway, expansion. In March of 2012, Venezuela announced plans to cooperate with Cuba to build a Copelia ice cream plant in the country and introduce sales of the product there. In April of the same year, the Cuban newspaper Trabajadores ran an article exposing the scarcity and poor quality of the product, as well as the inattentive service at the parlor, despite the recently completed renovations. Among the problems were broken freezers. It's ice cream! Fucking ice cream, and they're like, hey, the freezers ain't broke. All we got is fucking flavored milk now. I'm fucking dumb. We decided to build a fucking ice cream parlor in a fucking Cuban fucking eye fucking land. What's wrong with me, man? I just got home from work. Anyway, Havana's Copelia is a Cuban Revolution modernist building. It's a lot of words, magic man. It features five white granite discs annexed to one great helicoidal staircase. Did you hear that chicken in the background? Anyway, now with wood and tinted glass divided panels, all under one big round roof supported by 12 reinforced concrete arachnid columns, so spider legs are holding up the stairs. Okay, the flying saucer-shaped building represents a UFO and is one of the largest ice cream parlors in the world. What the fuck do you mean it's a UFO? It represents a UFO. Unidentified flying object. Yeah, when I think of ice cream, I think of fucking aliens. No. The flying saucer-shaped building, I already read that part, holding a maximum of 1,000 guests. Fucking great. Yeah, the few people that actually go there. It is located in the part of the Calle 23 known as La Rampa of the Vedado District. In the Vedado District, my bad. And occupies the entire city block between Calles 23 and 21. 21? And Calles K and L. I don't have a map of Cuba. I don't know how big that is. I'm going to assume it's fucking massive. Copelia Havana has been a major city landmark for both locals and visitors since its opening in 1966. But acquired additional fame when it was featured in one of the most widely viewed Cuban films, Strawberry and Chocolate. The park area surrounding the building featured lush ground cover and a canopy of towering banyan trees, which provide shape for open-air dining areas. Curvilinear paths lead to an elevated circular pavilion, inside of which only indoor seating is located. The gallery. There's a lot of pictures of it, too. Yo, that's actually fucking sick. You know what? Maybe we could book a trip there. I don't know. I really don't know, man. Look, I want to talk about the story about the Camembert cheese incident where Castro decided to show... Let's just read it here. I need to compose myself. It's a funny story. With serious faces on. One of Fidel Castro's many dairy-themed projects was an attempt to create Camembert cheese better than France's. Again, France is known for their Camembert variety of cheese, right? And Castro was like, we're going to make it better. Okay, that's not it, though. When the French farmer André Vieuxin visited Cuba in 1964, Castro gave him some Cuban Camembert. Vieuxin said that the cheese was not too bad, and eventually admitted that it was similar to the French cheese, but refused to say that it was better than France's. And we read earlier that you don't do that to Castro's. This guy's basically playing with fire, saying, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. This cheese isn't better than ours. It's on par, if not slightly worse. Okay. Refused to say that it was better than France's. This upset Castro. But Vieuxin pacified him, which is clever, right? This is what we learned earlier. You have to balance his ego out. This upset Castro, but Vieuxin pacified him by telling him that French cheese and Cuban cigars were both backed by hundreds of years of experience. And that, like Cuban cigars, French cheese was the best in its category. What I love about me reading this is I couldn't stop thinking about the Salmonella skit. Because he pretty much filled in the blanks doing his own thing. And at some point, he goes, fuck him, it's good cheese. It's a good bit, I love it. Dude, Salmonella makes everything more interesting. This is why I aim to be like him. That dude's fucking funny. Oh my goodness. There's so much to talk about when it comes to... Dude, he loved fucking... Castro loved dairy, like, more than anything. Probably not as much as the Cuban cigar, but the man loved his dairy, you know? Let's read about the cattle incident. I do know about that. Because, you know, you need cattle for dairy. After experimenting with Cuba's ice cream and cheese industries, Fidel Castro began working on creating a milk industry. Cuba had previously only had Criollo and Zebu cattle, two breeds notable for their resistance to hot Cuban weather, but not suitable for large-scale milk production. Castro attempted to overcome this by ordering several thousand Holstein bulls and cows from Canada, which he tried to keep alive in air-conditioned facilities. Nearly one-third of the Holstein cattle brought died within the first few weeks, and using climate-controlled facilities for Cuba's entire dairy industry would be impossible. As a result, Castro began to breed the Holsteins with native breeds in order to produce hybrid cattle that could produce milk while also surviving Cuba's harsh tropical weather. Castro referred to these hybrids as tropical Holsteins, and a majority of them failed, by the way. You can't really just do that. Yeah, they're both cows, but different genetics, it's a whole thing. Throughout the 1970s and 80s, thousands of cattle died from malnutrition and poor living conditions, which is really sad, and their numbers were steadily decreasing. Castro did have one notable victory, however, in 1972. Ubre Blanca was born. I love the story behind this thing. She was highly prolific, producing 113 liters of milk in one day. In 1982, as well as 24,268 liters in a single lactation cycle that same year. Holy shit! 24,268 liters in one lactation cycle in the same year. That's a lot of fucking milk. That's one cow! Castro loved Ubre Blanca and made sure that she was well taken care of. She had air conditioning in her stables with music and a security detail. Holy shit, this cow got better treatment than the people. Castro even brought foreign dignitary to visit the cow. Ubre Blanca was a symbol of national pride, and the Communist Party newspaper Granma published daily updates on her health and milk production. I'm still thinking about the fucking Salmonella did a great job illustrating all this stuff, right? Poorly drawn, but really funny. Now we get to the end. With all good things must come to an end. So Ubre Blanca's death made national news in Cuba. Granma ran a full-page obituary, and Ubre Blanca received military honors, a eulogy poem, and a marble statue in her honor. I would, too, if a cow could produce 24,268 liters of milk in a single lactation cycle. That's a fucking lot. In 2002, Cuban scientists tried to clone Ubre Blanca using a genetic sample taken from when she was alive. Well, there's no more on that, so possibly failed. In 1987, Castro once again asked a team of scientists to genetically engineer cattle. This time, hoping to create dog-sized cows to live in people's homes and produce enough milk for each family. This idea never came to fruition. No shit. Dog-sized cows. Big dogs, maybe. Dog-sized cows, really? You know what? Look, as wild as the idea may sound, I don't hate it. Dog-sized cows, I would love one. Are you kidding me? Imagine a little doggy cow in your house. You'd have to give them a lot of food, granted, but you know what? That's fine. I'm used to feeding, like, pets, you know? I'm used to keeping pets around. So, the idea doesn't annoy me as much as I think. I would love that, okay? If there's anyone listening from Cuba, which I highly doubt, but just in case, if there's anyone listening from Cuba, I'm being totally genuine when I say, try it out, fuck it, why not? Dog cows, okay. That's going to do it for this episode of the Meat Weed Podcast. This whole week's been a mess. There's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that I didn't tell you guys. I know I tell you guys literally everything, but some things I do got to keep to myself, and it was hard not to say it, to be honest. If you know, you know. You know, if you know me in person, you know. Again, long week, but we pulled through it, right? But yeah, the whole Castro thing, I actually liked it. I might look further into the books that they were talking about in regards to Castro, talking about his personal life, right? Like outside of the whole communist dictator thing. He seemed like a really likable guy. And like, I guess people who know him say like, just all kinds of shit. Okay, I'll look into it. I'll look into it. All right, see you guys next week.